And folks, we're going to hear Senate Bills 504 and 506 first. If we have time, we will open up 982. But if we're on the late side of 3:30, since we have floor, it probably won't. So with all that, I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 504A.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Senate Bill 504A requires a physician serving as an attending physician on a workers' compensation claim to be responsible for the treatment of the worker's compensable injury on an ongoing basis. It also allows an emergency room physician who is not authorized to serve as an attending physician to allow authorized temporary disability benefits for a maximum of 14 days. The measure passed unanimously out of the Commerce Committee and as well as the Senate and has the approval of MLAC. You have in front of you a -A3 amendment which deletes the phrase on an ongoing basis in two areas of the bill, in section 1, subsection 12, and then section 2, subsection 12 of the bill.
Very good. I'd like to call John Schultz, Ron Atwood, and Anthony Miller, please. And John, whenever you're ready, just describe the bill and what it does, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm John Schultz. I'm the administrator of the Workers' Compensation Division, which is part of the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and I'm here to provide information on Senate Bill 504A. Attending physicians in the workers' compensation system are responsible for the workers' treatment as a result of their on-the-job injury, and as part of that authority, they manage the workers' access to wage replacement benefits. They manage their return to work. They determine a worker's permanent disability. There's quite a bit of responsibility for the attending physician. When a worker seeks treatment through a hospital emergency room, which is not uncommon with workers' compensation, the worker may only see that emergency room physician that one time for that visit. Claims adjusters may have difficulty later contacting the emergency room doctor to clarify those issues I mentioned earlier, the worker's return to work status, whether or not they're being authorized temporary disability benefits, and setting up closing exams. So what this bill does is that it excludes an emergency room physician from the definition of an attending physician when they refer the worker to a primary care physician for follow-up care. If the worker needs time off from work, the bill allows the emergency room physician to authorize time loss or wage replacement benefits for up to 14 days, and thereafter the worker would need to see another qualified attending physician to manage their care and authorize further time loss benefits. In some instances, a physician may treat patients in an emergency room, but also maintain an independent practice. And I think as we get more into the rural areas of the state and less in the metro Portland area, that's typically more the case. In those situations, the emergency room physician could act as the worker's attending physician if the doctor otherwise qualifies as an attending physician and provide the follow-up care to the injured worker. In regard to the amendment, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the amendments, we discovered that amendments adopted on the Senate side did not remove some of the original bill's language that should have been deleted, and it was just an inadvertent oversight. The original bill referred to an attending physician treating a worker on an ongoing basis. And during discussions with the Workers' Compensation Management Labor Advisory Committee, there was concern that this language was too broad and could create some confusion. And stakeholders worked hard with MLAC and agreed that the bill language should be refined to specifically target the role of the emergency room physicians. And unfortunately, the original language, that language was not deleted during the amendment process. Your committee staff requested the amendment that deletes the on an ongoing basis phrase from the definition of the attending physician, and as Ms. Van Winkle pointed out, it's on page 2, line 44, and page 6, line 31 of the bill. The amendment conforms with our understanding of what MLAC voted to recommend to you, and with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions I can on the bill.
Go ahead, gentlemen, go first.
I'm Anthony Miller with the Oregon Self-Insured Association, and just to tell you a little bit of the genesis of this bill is I deal a lot with injured workers, and it just came from a personal frustration of dealing with injured workers that would go into the emergency room And you may get a slip of paper back from the emergency room physician saying, off work. And number one, trying to follow up with that emergency room physician to get more details on what their limitations were to be able to get them back to work in a timely fashion is almost impossible. Many emergency room physicians will not even sign off on a light duty. And also, if any of you have been to an emergency room lately, they basically want to make sure that you're triaged, you're not going to die anytime soon, and want you to go see a regular physician. And so by doing that, by limiting the time loss to 14 days, then it also encourages the worker to go see a regular physician as soon as possible so they can get the best, most appropriate treatment. And we worked with labor on this. We had, I believe, two or three work sessions with labor and also plaintiff's attorneys, and everyone has signed off everyone agrees that this is a good bill.
My name is Ronald Atwood, and I'm also here on behalf of the Oregon Self-Insurers Association. The other aspect of this bill that I think is important to mention is that it clarifies a potential ambiguity. The statute is clear that only an attending physician can authorize time loss, and typically an emergency room physician is not an attending physician. And so that if a worker went to an emergency room physician, it's possible that time loss that they'd authorize wouldn't be honored. And this very specifically allows the emergency room physician to authorize time loss. It also gives an incentive to get the worker to a primary care physician who knows them, who can provide ongoing care, and to make sure that there's good communication between the worker and the physician and the employer as in terms of care issues and return to work issues. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Any questions of these gentlemen? All right. Thank you, guys. Why don't you just stay right there because we're going to jump right in. I think Mr. Atwood has signed up for the next one, too. So
yes.
Stay where you are. Would anyone else like to testify on Senate Bill 504A today? All right. I'm going to close public hearing on Senate Bill 504A. I will entertain a motion. Representative Esquivel.
Yes.
Open work session on Senate Bill 504A. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 504A to the House floor. Oh, we have an 8-3 amendment. I'm sorry.
Forgive me.
Yeah.
I will entertain
Let's
a motion.
Let's back up that thing.
On the amendment.
Mr. Chair, I move that we attach the A3 amendment to Senate Bill 504A.
Representative Esquivel moves the A3 amendment into Senate Bill 504. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Very good. So moved, Representative.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 504A as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Esquivel moves Senate Bill 504A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Kristen, please. Excuse.
Aye.
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 Okay.
Representative Esquivel is kind enough to carry it. Close work session on Senate Bill 504A. I'm going to open public hearing on Senate Bill 506A. Teresa?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 506A defines the term direct medical sequelae as conditions that were diagnosed, requested by the injured worker, and accepted by the employer prior to closure of claim for the purposes of determining impairment in a workers' compensation claim. The measure has the support of MMLAC and passed unanimously out of the Senate Commerce Committee and passed out of the Senate on a 29-1 vote.
Thank you. I have John Schultz and Ron Edwood, and I assume you're Linda Barn.
That's correct.
Very good. John, you want to go ahead first?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, for the record, I'm John Schultz. I'm the administrator of the Workers' Compensation Division, which is part of Department of Consumer and Business Services, and I'm here today to provide information on Senate Bill 506A. Under current workers' compensation law, medical conditions that are a direct result of a worker's accepted condition are called direct medical sequelae, and they are included when determining a worker's permanent impairment due to their work-related injury. As you probably recall, a benefit that a worker will be entitled to receive is permanent partial disability when a worker's work injury or occupational disease results in permanent impairment, permanent disability, as a result of the injury or occupational disease. The idea of direct medical sequelae is probably best illustrated by a couple of examples, and I put a couple in my testimony, and I'll share one with you. Back injuries occur quite often in workers' compensation, and in many cases, workers suffer from a herniated disc. Low back is very typical. A herniated or bulging disc may result in the worker experiencing loss of strength and sensation in their left foot, left leg. They may lose some reflex. When the insurer determines permanent impairment at claim closure, the disability in the leg and the foot would be included in the award of permanent impairment because they're directly related to the accepted condition, which is a herniated disc in the low back. And that's the impairment in the leg and the foot would be direct medical sequela of the actual accepted condition, the herniated disc in the back. Under current law, direct medical sequela conditions are included whether or not the worker has requested that condition be accepted by the insurer. The only exception to this is if the condition is specifically denied by the insurer or the self-insured employer prior to claim closure. The denied conditions under those circumstances are not included in the determination of permanent impairment or permanent disability. What this bill does is it limits when direct medical sequelae of an accepted condition are included in the determination of permanent impairment at claim closure. Under this bill, the condition would have to be diagnosed. The worker must request acceptance of the condition, and the insurer must accept or deny the condition. This should help the insurer to identify the conditions that they need to rate for permanent disability. And I also think it gets to another issue where the insurer has an opportunity to investigate and examine a condition in regard to acceptance or denial of that condition. The bill would clarify that workers retain the right to file a claim for direct medical sequela condition as a new or omitted medical condition, and they could file for that condition at any time. And that was a result of discussions in regard to this bill during the MLAC process. The Workers' Compensation Management Labor Advisory Committee reviewed this bill and supports it, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that I can.
Go ahead, sir. Let's just get the whole panel out.
Thank you. My name is Ronald Atwood. I'm here again on behalf of the Oregon Self-Insurance Association. This is part of the closure process, and I want to kind of start kind of at the beginning with the idea that part of workers' compensation starts with a claim, and a worker makes that claim. The employer then has the opportunity to process that claim, and then we've set up a system that if there's a dispute that arises out of that process, that can be resolved. And what's happened in the part of the closure process is that direct medical sequelae got taken out of that process. And so the purpose of this is to make sure that conditions that are rated as closures are conditions that claimants have asked to be included in their claims, and the employers had an opportunity to investigate it and to take the normal processing that they would in order to determine whether it's really part of the claim or not. We worked with MLAC. This came with a unanimous vote out of MLAC. We had at least two work sessions on this in which a number of members of the division were there, and they provided very helpful suggestions. We rewrote this to try to deal with some of those issues. Before the Senate, Senator Bakken, who has in the past practiced in the area of workers' compensation, he raised a couple of questions, and we addressed those, and that's one of the amendments that came out of this. And what this allows is that the conditions that are closed during the claim closure process are those that are accepted, so that the closure process doesn't become a fight over compensability. There is nothing in this process that takes any rights away from the workers. It just clarifies when an issue is to be addressed. and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Linda Barno, I'm co-chair of the Oregon Self-Insurance Association, and I'm really going to add just very briefly to what's been said before, and that I want to just make sure that everyone understands that SB 506 deals with a situation that's in a very narrow part of workers' compensation and only happens during a reconsideration process. And what this bill does is bring it all in line with the other processes that are involved. It ensures that the workers' claims throughout before and after closure are taken care of and are processed, and that the attending physician gets to look at the conditions, and the attending physician gets to rate the condition first. So our bill helps put everything in the process that workers are being used to. So if you have any questions.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I really want to understand what this bill does. And like everything about workers' compensation, it always seems like everything is technical and nothing is simple. But I want you to make this really simple so that every member of this committee really does have a grasp, because people have told me diametrically opposed things about what the bill does, and I feel like I probably have some more background in workers' comp than the average legislator, and I don't understand it. So I'm just going to ask a series of questions until I feel that I really do understand it. I mean, I don't even know how to pronounce sequelae, let alone know what it is.
Right.
But what has been portrayed to me by some opponents of this bill is that this will make it harder for particularly unrepresented injured workers who don't have lawyers representing them.
Representative, may I interrupt you just a moment? I'm going to carry Senate Bill 982 over to Monday, so you all can go have a cold drink. Thank you. Go ahead, Senator.
That doesn't mean that I'm going to take the next half hour to understand this, I hope.
So, I might.
So let me just see if I'm starting from the right place. What this deals with is awards of permanent partial disability. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And the change that the bill is making seems to be that right now when you're rating somebody's disability, you have to include sequelae, which I think are all the things that result from the original injury, in your rating, unless you have specifically denied all those things that might be consequences.
That's correct. When a claim comes in, whoever is processing the claim has an obligation to accept whatever is to be accepted in the claim. It's not simply we accept your claim. The acceptance tells them what part of the body and what conditions to be accepted. When the claimant's condition becomes medically stationary, then it's our obligation to close that claim, and that process starts with a closing report from the treating physician. And what is to be closed and rated are the accepted conditions. If the claimant appeals, and sometimes they do that when they're represented, sometimes they do that on their own, it goes to the department and goes through the reconsideration process. And oftentimes a medical arbiter will then do the rating process. And where the issue arises is the medical arbiter says, I think the claim is bigger than what the claimant has claimed and what the employer has accepted, and they say, I'm going to rate this additional condition here. And as you know, once the award comes out, an aggrieved party can appeal, and the only issue is the amount of the rating, and all of a sudden the medical arbiter has said, I want to include an additional condition within the claim that nobody else has included up to that point. And so the claimant hasn't made a claim for that condition, and the employer hasn't had an opportunity to process it. So all of a sudden in a hearing involved rating a disability, you're dealing with a compensability issue. So what this does is it says that the medical arbiter can only rate the conditions that have been accepted, and if the claimant thinks that the claim should be bigger, and at any time they think it should be bigger, they have the opportunity to file a new or admitted medical condition claim, and the process starts from the beginning. And the legislature adopted the process of new or admitted medical condition claims some number of years ago. And all this really does is to ensure that the conditions of a medical sequelae are treated as part of that process. So I don't believe that it adds any additional burden on a claimant. What it really does is it makes sure that before a condition is rated, it's been accepted. That's really what it does in its simplest form.
Jim, I'm going to get right back to you. So I want it clear in my head too, but I will be right back to you. So I get a disc problem in my back. This is how it was explained to this laborer. And I get a claim for my disc problem. But I have leg pain too. But they didn't give me any compensation for the leg pain. Later on, I can go back and say, I want you to reconsider this because I want some compensation for the leg pain too. Mm-hmm. Nothing's stopping me from doing that. If it's legitimate, I will get more compensation for that pain as well.
Exactly.
Is that accurate?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So to follow along with your description, so when the medical arbiter is looking at this claim, they're not examining the injured worker. They're looking at the record. Is that correct?
That's not totally correct. What the medical arbiter does typically is has the records as well as does a physical examination and then issues a report. And that report is then based upon their physical examination and their review of the records. And typically the department sends them a letter that says, these are the accepted conditions. This is how you should conduct your examination. Please rate the disability.
And a follow-up, Mr. Chair. So if they are doing what you described earlier, which is increasing the award from what the insurer originally awarded, they're doing that based on some objective medical findings, either the ones that were in the record or the ones that they observed when they examined the worker?
Oftentimes, awards are increased or decreased based upon the findings of the medical arbiter. That's kind of the nature of the process. The rating is first to be done by a treating physician, and the employer then takes those findings and does the award. The medical arbiter can take a look at the same person and come up with different findings, may have a more accurate evaluation, and the award may be different. And sometimes, like I say, the awards go down, sometimes they go up. That's kind of the nature of the process. It's designed to give a claimant a second look so that they have an opportunity to have a second person look at them. And hopefully the medical arbiter is trained in ways that a treating physician is not to do a disability rating. The problem comes in not in that process, but when they take a condition that's separate, that's not been accepted, and adds it to the claim. That's where the problem comes in, and that's what this is designed to deal with. Not to take away the medical arbiter's right to do the normal rating, which has been part of the process for a long time.
Yes, please do. Questions?
I want you to be satisfied as much as possible.
But what this is talking about, these sequelae, are not like whole brand new unrelated injuries or conditions. They're ones related to the original injury, right?
Actually, no, that's the problem, because in the example, this doesn't arise where somebody has a herniated disc with some residual leg pain. Those claims, that's not where this process comes from. The worst example that we've come up with is a condition where a claim was closed without disability, and it was an elbow claim. And the medical arbiter determined that not only was there some epicondylitis in the elbow, but maybe the hands and the shoulder were also involved, and an award where there was no award ended up being a $200,000 award. And there was the medical arbiter decided that the injury was much broader than had been accepted, and so made a compensability decision, which was really beyond what they're supposed to do.
But they must have thought then that starting with the elbow extending to the hand and shoulder were related to the original workplace exposure, they wouldn't have awarded that disability.
That was the medical arbiter's opinion. The problem comes with, if you start back with the process, the worker makes the claim, an employer then has the opportunity to accept or deny that claim, and they do that through an investigation. And in this part of the investigation, they determined that it was an elbow that had hurt, and that's what the treating doctor had rated, and that's what they were asked to rate. The medical arbiter asserted himself in the process and said, no, I think it's a much bigger. And so in a rating hearing, we're dealing with compensability issues, and the employer did not have the opportunity to investigate, did not have an opportunity to make a compensability decision. And that's the problem.
And don't you have the ability to appeal the decision that comes out of reconsideration?
We do have the ability to appeal, but the hearing process goes, there's no testimony taken at a reconsideration hearing. The issue is, was an error made during the rating process? So in a normal hearing on compensability, both the claimant and the employer have an opportunity to ask their experts, is this related or not? You have opportunity to present testimony, and then an administrative law judge renders a decision. That process is missing from the reconsideration. The only thing that comes up is there's no testimony, and the issue is, was there an error made? You don't get a chance to go to your experts and ask them, is it work-related or not?
But there wouldn't necessarily even have been a compensability hearing, because this language of the law talks about the original accepted condition. So this could just be a condition that the employer accepted the claim. I mean, the worker doesn't necessarily know what's being accepted when they file an injury claim. They just know whether they're getting to go to the doctor and getting taken care of.
Well,
how would they know specifically what exactly you're accepting, other than just that they were hurt and they know they need treatment?
Well, when a claim is accepted, an initial notice of acceptance goes out. It's in writing. There's a whole set of rules on what information has to be contained within it. The employer must tell the worker whether the claim has been accepted as disabling or non-disabling, and what rights flow from that if they want to challenge the classification. And then they have to list the specific condition. So in the case of the back, you indicate you have a herniated disc at L4 or 5. And so the worker at that point knows their accepted condition is a disc at L4 or 5. If they think that they stumbled and fell, and at the same time they hurt their back, they hurt their knee, they can write to the employer and say, hey, I want you to accept my knee as well. And that happens at times. And at that point, the employer has the obligation to process that. They have a time limit in which to do that. And then once they have made their decision, they either issue a denial or they issue a modified notice of claim acceptance with the same kind of warnings that go to the worker. When it comes up in the reconsideration process, that is all missing. And so you can have a claim process as a back claim, and a whole new condition that nobody thought was part of it come in, and there's no ability to then respond.
And so may I just interject here a minute? So this actually could prove to be in favor and helpful to the injured worker. Thank you. Representative Rosenbaum, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I just have two more questions.
Yeah,
so
go ahead.
I don't see how this would ever be in favor of the injured worker, actually, because I don't see how the worker would ever get more out of a permanent partial disability by not having the medical arbiter able to rate the disability, including things that you didn't specifically accept. And you can answer that if you want to. But I think what I really want to ask you, and then I want to ask Mr. Schultz my final question, is that a distinction is being made to me between people who have lawyers and the number of workers, and I think there are a lot, who are unrepresented and just file a claim, the claim's accepted, and I know how this works because I used to do this stuff on the job and help people as a union steward. People don't have a clue if they file a claim and it's accepted, what is being accepted, except that they know that they're getting their bills paid when they go to the doctor, and if they need to be off the job, they're getting time less. So it does seem like you would really need a lawyer representing you to be sure that when you filed a claim that and then when the claim was closed, that every aspect of that disability was specifically spelled out, because otherwise, the way I'm reading this bill, then you won't get an award of permanent disability for anything that wasn't specifically stipulated. And my reading of that is that you better have a lawyer looking not just at your denial, which anybody would probably do if they needed to appeal that, but and even to get a lawyer if your claim's accepted. And that doesn't seem to me that it's good for the system, whether it's for workers or for employers.
Let me answer that. Your question this way. Unfortunately, workers' compensation is very complicated. There's nothing in this particular bill that tips the balance from an uncomplicated system to a complicated system. It's already complicated whether this passes out or not. We already have to list the condition, and whether a worker has a lawyer or not, they still have to look at those notices of acceptance. That process goes on whether this bill passes or not. The reconsideration process will still go on whether this bill passes or not. This doesn't add a level of complication that I think tips the balance in a way that I think should defeat the bill. I hate to say it, but it's a complicated process. And this just really doesn't add substantially to that.
Well, and I can't resist commenting. You get a solicitation in the mail for a credit card. You sign that thing off. By God, you should have a lawyer read it. You go buy a car. You sign an agreement. You buy a house. I sign a release form for my daughter to go to a field trip. I am technically signing over a whole bunch of things without an attorney there to advise me. Life is chock full of examples where we would be, a human being would be incredibly benefited if they had their personal attorney sitting right next to them at all times. That's not what the world is about, though, with all due respect. Representative Holby, do you have
Mr. Chair, could I
absolutely
will shut up if you let me ask one more question.
No, that's fine. Laura, that's right. Excuse me, Representative. I forgot you had a question for Mr. Schultz.
So, John, after listening to this, it does seem to me that this is going to result in some lower awards of permanent partial disability to injured workers, that people are currently getting compensated when their claims closed for things from the description that the medical arbiter has seen that will no longer be allowable. So I want to just ask you, is that the case? Am I misunderstanding something?
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum. First of all, I'd say that that's one of the very questions that I think we were trying to tackle as we worked on this bill in the work sessions that Mr. Atwood mentioned. In the bill analysis that we did for the department. We did conclude in our bill analysis that this bill would tend to make it somewhat more likely. I'm looking for the language here. Somewhat more likely that some workers would see reduced permanent disability awards. I think we tried to address that issue through a couple of things. One is to ensure that the worker received not only their initial notice of acceptance, which specifies the conditions upon which that a final rating would be made upon, but also an updated notice of acceptance at closure of the claim, so that if conditions emerged during the original acceptance and closure, that the worker would have a chance to compare those and see if things were being omitted. Secondly, the issue of trying to ensure that if a worker does raise an issue of an omitted condition, that they could do that at any time, and that they would not only in the amendment that was put together through the Senate process, not only that they could request acceptance, but that it would require processing by the insurance company of that request. And so that would mean that the claim would actually need to be reopened, and the worker would be eligible to receive any benefits then due them at that time. And having said all that, I think that the group did try to address that very issue as best as possible. I think the policy issue that we were wrestling with was the issue of trying to create a system where workers could truly understand what conditions were accepted and what should be rated, and what was happening to them in a workers' compensation context, versus an employer's need to investigate and truly have an opportunity to examine conditions and make a compensability decision on something before it gets rated and benefits are paid on it.
Mr. Chair, I wonder if that analysis is something we could get a copy of.
I'd appreciate it if we could. And then a follow-up on that. I imagine you keep incredible amounts of data. After this, assuming this would pass and the governor would sign it, we would be able to track and tell if there were any trends that visibly showed that due to this legislation, there were fewer awards given out. Is that true? Will we be able to track the impact this has on the number of workers' compensation benefits being handed out?
Mr. Chair, I think that in under normal conditions, the answer to that would be likely yes. One complication this session is that we have made some changes to the permanent partial disability law over the last couple of sessions, so there's always the potential effect of some confounding additional variables coming in. But I think overall the answer to that is yes, and we already are planning to review and evaluate any changes that occur in permanent partial disability benefits as a result of some of the other bills. So the process is in place to do that.
And you will follow up on getting an analysis for just the that you're just taking out copies of that to everyone up here?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I can do that. I have one copy now.
I'm sorry. Yeah, if possible, maybe we could get somebody else from Committee Services to make copies before we vote.
Oh, yeah, right here. Good. Yes, thank you. Representative Hovey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm trying to remember what my question was about 20 minutes ago. this doesn't seem very simple to me, but I guess I'm still troubled with the concept that this sequelae, or whatever you want to call it, sequela, is a result of the original injury. And it seems to me that now we're going through a process that's going to close that claim, and to further make a claim on that sequela, that the worker is going to be obligated to file a new claim on that, and I'm not sure what the timing involved is whether going to affect whether or not that's going to be accepted down the road or not. And it seems to me that this ought to be on the same claim and not filing a new claim, because by filing a new claim, you're setting a whole nother process of lawyers, a whole nother process of cost to the worker, and I'm not quite frankly sure that a worker would understand that they need to go through that process. I think this is, just from the discussion I've heard, I gotta tell you, I think it's a bad bill. Just because I think it's going to make it worse for workers in trying to collect on an injury that subsequently morphed into something else, and you're going to, it appears to me, you're going to make them go through a whole other process of claims and stuff, when really your problem is that you need to have the ability to have a hearing on the reconsideration of the sequelae. I mean, maybe I've got that all wrong, but it seems to me that this ought to all be done under one claim and not running a whole other series of claims on this subsequent identification of complicating illnesses or injuries.
Representative Foley, Linda Barno. I represent an employer and injured workers and their co-workers, and self-insureds have a special relationship with their employees, and we usually are companies that they seek to come to us because of our good benefits. And this relationship is very critical to our insurance policy and our insurance program. And when we originally started off, we started off with 37 concepts we had for this year and really got down to just two or three. And we wanted to make sure that this was not viewed as a takeaway. And from, you know, I'm handling claims all day long. And, you know, a claim is filed. We send out a notice of acceptance. And it said, at any time you can write, I want it expanded. And I get those letters. By the way, I think my elbow, you know, in a fall, they're treating the back. And they say, I think my elbow should be included in this. We send it to the treating doctor. And the treating doctor goes, most of the time goes, yeah. Sometimes they go, no, he had an elbow claim from before. This really isn't the same. Or he had high blood pressure before. And then we send out an amended notice of acceptance. It's not a complicated process. Then at the time of closure, we reiterate that. You know, sometimes during a claim, we may have an independent medical exam, and I kind of think it might clear it up because it's a complicated system. Independent medical exam, we send the worker to the doctor, and the doctor says either, yes, this is part of the claim and the condition, no, the diabetes is not part of the claim, you know, this and that, and if they're treating, you're getting diabetic medicine, you would do maybe a partial denial for the diabetes. But, and then we make a decision there, process the claim, and the worker can, you know, if it's accepted, you just go forward. If it's denied, the worker can appeal. In the recon situation, the process, for lack of a better word, I hate using quarter words, is a stop. It's stopped. A person sees them once, makes a decision. The decision, the medical report isn't given to the treating physician to comment on. You know, they may have information that would add to this. As an employer, we can't go back to the medical arbiter and ask additional questions. It's stopped. Now, from an employer process, the worker wants to write a letter and say we want to take it on. That process will continue. In fact, the worker may end up ultimately, in some cases, getting more benefits if they're saying time loss is related to this. But the claim for the accepted part is still closed and rated. That part doesn't stop and drag on. It's just a matter that there's a new condition, and we will process it forward. And so, whereas an independent medical exam, if he says, you accept this and you deny this, it goes to the treating physician. They comment on it. You make an accept-deny decision based on that. But this process in the recon is just kind of a narrow process. And we're just asking that, if something is brought up in this process, that the employer and the employee can go and process it like it is in the normal claim. That's what the bill was intended for.
Are there any further questions of these nice people?
Mr. Chair, I would like to add one comment in regard to Representative Holvey's wondering about the time frame in terms of filing for a new or omitted condition claim. That can be done at any time. There are no time limits on that filing.
Representative Holvey, would you like to ask another question?
Well, it still seems to me that you're trying to address a problem of not being able to have an opportunity to a hearing for a reconsideration by shutting off an existing claim and making somebody file a new claim. Is that true?
Representative Holding, let me explain it this way.
I'd like to ask Mr. Schultz that question.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holding, in the way the process would work, as I understand it, is that the medical sequela of the accepted condition would be rated in the closure, in the permanent partial disability rating, and included as part of the benefit, as long as they were diagnosed, were submitted to be accepted by the worker. If, for example, they were not listed as an accepted condition, that the worker said, please accept this condition, and that was done prior to closure of the claim. And in that case, it would be under one claim. And if those conditions were not met, then I think you are correct that the worker would have to request acceptance of a new condition. That would be related to the original claim. It would be the same claim for purposes of workers' compensation. But I think getting to what you were asking about, yes, the worker would have to take an action and ask for acceptance of that condition under those circumstances.
And thank you. That was the straight answer I was looking for. So you're adding another process for the worker to jump through, to go through, to get this condition dealt with by workers' comp. And it's complicated enough the way it is. I'm not sure I can support that concept. I think there needs to be another way to get to it. I don't know what it is. I'm not an expert. Maybe Diane can help me with it. I don't know.
And I don't know if we're going to get to it today either. Any more questions of these nice folks? We're not going to move this bill today because the votes don't exist on this committee. So you'll have your work cut out for you. Any other comments? Would anyone else like to testify to Senate Bill 506A? Whenever you're ready, Ernie.
Chair Schaffler, members of the committee, I have to excuse me, I'm fighting a cold today. My name is Ernest Del Mazo, and I'm volunteer executive director of Injured Workers Alliance. I helped co-found the organization in 1998, so for 9 years now I've been advocating for workers. Direct medical sequela means that a condition which originates or stems from a compensable injury or disease that is clearly established medically. Disability from direct medical sequelae is rated under rules under Oregon revised statutes. And as noted earlier, an accepted condition, let's say for low back strain with herniated disc at L4-5, and the worker can develop permanent weakness in the leg and foot due to radiculopathy, and the weakness is considered a direct medical sequelae of the herniated disc. What this bill does is it puts all the responsibility on the injured worker. More and more we're finding that injured workers cannot find legal representation. It's reached crisis mode. This bill, if enacted, will essentially force the injured worker to be very educated on medical issues. The communications between workers and their doctors has always been poor, as noted and mentioned in previous bills of past sessions. Many times injured workers can't even get their medical records. They would have no way of knowing what these other injuries are to put in their claim. I wanted to make a few points of issues raised. First of all, the lobbyists for self-insurers implied that when judges rule and include these injuries, that they're violating law. Just this morning, I found about 8 cases of appellate court rulings that support that these injuries can be included on claims. He implied otherwise. Again, workers have great difficulty getting medical records. They're not medical professionals, nor should they be expected to be, which this bill essentially forces them to be. Workers' compensation, we've been told time and time again, is complicated. For that very reason, this bill is bad. You are forcing a complicated system onto a worker and throwing at him more information than he could adequately know. Workers' compensation is complicated. This bill is bad. Again, excuse me, cold. A lawyer is not an option for many workers. They cannot find a lawyer. Unrepresented workers are being thrown to the wolves if this bill passes. Injuries, as we know, can cause loss of use of function of other body parts, and this bill will force a worker to know and have to list every body part, perhaps even muscles, which there may be dozens, literally dozens in the hand. Weakness, again, is considered direct medical sequelae of herniated disc in the case of L4-5. Senate Bill 506 just places a massive and perhaps unreachable burden on workers, many of whom are not represented. This bill will, if passed, will virtually shut the door on unrepresented workers. Claimant attorneys are being chased away in droves. A lot of issues have been raised about this because of low compensation, many times less than minimum wage through the entire time involved in a case. The official record of an March 2nd MLAC hearing, Barbara Smith of the Workers' Compensation Division testified that SB 506 would, and I quote, according to the records of that hearing, require that the sequelae be claimed prior to claim closure. This is different from a new or admitted condition. The department's concern is that a worker will have to request, and more importantly, have a medical sequelae accepted, the key word, prior to closure, for that condition to be considered when a claim is closed and permanent disability is determined. Currently, we know that condition may be allowed at rating of disability at closure. In this regard, historically, the odds are stacked heavily against the injured who file for new or admitted medical conditions. Oregon law, contrary to some statements earlier, prohibits workers from adding omitted medical conditions at certain stages of their claim. As you heard earlier, the concern of that March 2nd MLAC hearing involved reconsideration stage. Workers cannot bring new evidence during reconsideration. Representative Hovley and Rosenbaum are right. The worker will be forced to file a new claim, start from the very beginning. Now, I want you to know that a workers' comp claim, it's fairly common for these to go on for 3 to 5.5 years. We're talking about starting from scratch. This is a really bad bill. I've been around for 9 years. I've studied workers' comp since its inception in the early 1900s. And I want to say that basically, I would say this is the absolute worst bill that I've seen, the most anti-worker legislation that's come to this session in at least since 1995's SB 369. Perhaps it's the worst bill in a generation. Imagine most of you have campaigned for political office as being supportive of the working class. If asked, you'll say you want a workers' compensation system that's fair to all parties. We don't ask for anything special. And that no one should destroy workers and their families by depriving them of needed medical care. You'd say you want workers to be able to provide for their loved ones. A yes vote for this legislation, I strongly believe, without a thorough study, indicates just the opposite.
Henry, you're going to have to wrap it up because we're all due on the floor in 30 seconds.
I ask you to put workers' health and welfare above the interests of greedy insurance companies and oppose Senate Bill 506. Please allow a study as what they want to do in regards to the reconsideration process. Why have a study for that and not for this? Please do the right thing for Oregon workers. I do thank you for the opportunity to defend Oregon workers. Can I answer any questions?
Nope, because we got to go. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 506A, and we're adjourned.